Welcome to the Learning Reinvented podcast, brought to you by myself, James Politilo, and the team at The Learning Effect. There are lots of learning podcasts out there, so we wanted to do something slightly different. This week, we're talking disability, and in particular, the way learning teams and the learning industry approach this. I am delighted to welcome Kat Appleton to the podcast. Thank you for joining us, Kat. Do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your background?
Yes, and thank you for inviting me to join you on the podcast. So I started out in education back in 2002 when I got into family learning and teaching, and I've remained in education and learning and development since then. So, you know, I've been around a while, worked in, you know, pretty much most of the industries. You know, I've worked in secondary education, further education, work-based learning, and higher education, and then I kind of took the step into learning and development in the corporate world, and it's really not too dissimilar. You know, it was a lot of going to the same events and kind of doing the same things, and one of the things for me that really has kind of driven my career through learning and development has been about making it better and kind of finding the pain points. I've always been really passionate about people's barriers to learning, and that's kind of where I started, and it's that got me interested in the technology, which has got me into the role that I've been doing for the past 4 years, which is looking after learning management systems, because the of how the technology supports the learning. So that's kind of a little bit about my learning background. I'm also in the process of coming to terms with my own disabilities. I've never ever thought of myself as disabled until I actually put it down on paper for a presentation that I was giving to some colleagues in one of our talent teams. And I kind of went, oh, actually, that looks like quite a list that if anybody else was to look at it, they would go, well, that's somebody who's disabled. But I've never never ever declared myself as disabled until recently, when I realized that actually I need to champion disabilities. From a background point of view, you know, I was two when I started going deaf, and then when I was four and profoundly deaf, I had my adenoids taken out, my hearing came back. And it's one of those early memories of the nurse that had been looking after me. When I first heard her speak, she didn't sound like I expected her to, and I was really surprised by her voice, because I hadn't actually heard her voice until after the operation. Nobody's ever been able to explain to me what the link there was with my adenoids, and my hearing has always been impacted since then. And of course, I was the typical teenager that, you know, listened to their music too loud, went to the rock clubs that were too loud, you know, and probably abused my hearing a little bit, which means I'm now hard of hearing, and you know, I have continued to lip read throughout my entire life.
I think it's really interesting, when we last spoke, you were sharing that you sort of revealed this to your team, and you were, you know, telling your team about the disabilities that you have and yeah, sharing a bit of insight into that. But up to that point, they wouldn't have known.
No. And it was interesting, because my husband is also in L&D, and we would both been at Learning Technologies. And it was only after we were coming home from Learning Technologies, and I was kind of very tired and frustrated, and you know, actually started talking about my disabilities, that he kind of went, actually, I didn't realise that was some of your lived experience. You know, it'd always been very much a family joke with my children. You know, if they wanted to annoy me, they would put their hands over their mouth, because then I couldn't hear what they were saying. And it was one of their little things that they would do. Yeah, kids like to do things to wind their parents up. And he said he'd kind of never really put the two and two together of, if, you know, I'm not looking at him, I'm potentially not hearing everything that's being said. But then once he realized that, you know, if he's walking off into another room, or, you know, people are stood behind me, I'm not necessarily going to have caught what was said. I might have heard that something was said, but not actually what was said. And I think that's one of those things that I probably didn't realise. And it was the whole lockdown, working from home, you know, all of the meetings suddenly being, you know, video calls. And actually what outed me was the number of times I was laughing at colleagues who were talking but were on mute. So I was lip reading them and understanding them, and everybody else is like, but you're on mute. And, you know, there are occasions now where some of my colleagues will, you know, sometimes they will deliberately say things on mute just for my amusement. We're going to get caught out at some point because there'll be another lip reader in that call eventually.
But it's interesting, as you said, you've got your coping mechanism, whether that's lip reading or not. And, you know, you mentioned your experience at Learning Tech and that being one that sort of brought this to a bit of a head for you and was quite frustrating, I know. So what happened for you at Learning Tech?
So at Learning Tech, I mean, it's not just my hearing that's an issue. It's I'm neurodivergent as well. And, you know, I've had 2 years to curate this environment around myself that, you know, is my perfect environment. You know, I can have my subtitles and my closed captions if I want them. You know, I can manage the amount of stimulus that I'm getting. And I don't think I'd realised pre-lockdowns just how much that external stimulus could really impact me. But then when I was at Learning Tech, you know, some really great presentations going around the actual event, but it was just, there was this cacophony of noise and sound. And, you know, what I'd actually come to realize that I was going to these sessions that sounded on paper like they were great. You know, they were talking about accessibility, and it's like, you know, for 20 years we've been talking about accessibility. It's like, oh, this is good. You know, we're coming out of, you know, this new world where people are more aware of things. This is going to be good. And actually what happened was that I went to sessions, not one of them anyone had thought to have any subtitles running on the bottom of the screen. You know, even the sessions that were talking about accessibility were not accessible. You know, I was really struggling to concentrate because it's that suddenly I'm in that big noisy environment where there's lots of sound going on around you. So trying to focus in on a speaker who, you know, I couldn't always get close to the front to be able to actually physically lip read them, or they weren't always looking at me, so I couldn't lip read them. Meant that it became really inaccessible. If I was near a speaker, the sound was really distorted. And it was just, you know, even the sessions that were talking about accessibility weren't accessible. And that was my big frustration of, there's some really simple changes. You know, if you think about how busy some of those sessions at Learning Technologies can be, you've got people stood around the sides, you know, lots of people clamoring, just simply having the subtitles. You know, somebody's talking, running across the bottom of, you know, if you're delivering in PowerPoint Live, you know, they're there, they're real time. And that's not just helping people like me, that's helping everybody. That's helping the people that are stood, you know, just to the side and perhaps can't quite hear the speaker, and, you know, the sound quality is not brilliant, but they can focus in and they can concentrate on what, you know, they're seeing on the screen. You know, it's simple things like that, and we're just not doing it. And I think my big frustration with all of this through the kind of the 20 years I've been in, you know, education and learning and development, is everybody's talked this really good game about accessibility, but no one's role modeling it. Nobody's actually showing you these are the really easy ways that you can be doing this to make the world a more accessible place. And by making it a more accessible place, we make it a more productive place. You know, and I think that's where my frustration lies. You know, I did a bit of a rant on LinkedIn about it, you know, and it was interesting. I either had people kind of responding to me going, oh, wow, I hadn't realised, yeah, you're right, that's a terrible experience. And then there were other people that, you know, almost got a little bit defensive. Oh, well, the sessions I went to had somebody doing sign language. I'm like, that feels like, you know, when we're talking about these levels of accessibility, that feels like that's the bare minimum, not what we should be applauding as, oh, wasn't it brilliant that that one had, you know, that one had some subtitles and that one had somebody, you know, translating into British Sign Language. And it just, I think it just really brought it home to me, and it made it quite frustrating for me. But then it got me talking about my disabilities, and it got other people realizing that, you know, we've spent, I don't know how many years, at least 20 years talking about accessibility, but we've always talked about them as these other people, these people that, you know, exist out there. Oh, there are people with accessibility needs, there's people that need screen readers, there are people that need ramps to access buildings, not thinking about, you know, the 70% of those hidden disabilities that are people that are, they're in the room, you know, they are the L&D professionals as well, you know, not even thinking about our employees and the people that, you know, we're training and developing. So yeah, it was an eye-opener for me.
Yeah, and I think you raised some really interesting points there, and I agree with the lip service point that a lot of what we appear to do in L&D is playing lip service, or we champion ourselves for someone taking the trouble to do subtitles or whatever it happens to be on what we're doing, rather than having enough awareness. And sometimes we think it's enough to run a course around disability. That's our thing. We've run a course around disability. Don't actually role model or think about our own service or turn those lessons back in on ourselves, or be curious about what are, as you said, some of the simple things we can do, or straightforward things, or what are the things that technology are enabling us to do in a way that we couldn't do 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago in the same way. And I think it's a real shame that that isn't at the forefront of what we do in L&D. We should be role modeling good behavior in all of these organizational things that we're doing, because otherwise we become part of the lip service whim of the week, you know, virtue signaling part of organizations, rather than those people who are living the values that we should be espousing.
Yeah, and you know, for me, what really kind of struck home was when I started thinking about the user experience design principles. If you think about good UX, one of the fundamental principles is designing useful, equitable, enjoyable and usable experiences. So whether you're creating a product or writing a document or creating, you know, a service for people, it's about understanding our users and how we make that equitable. And I think the last kind of 2 years has really taught us, you know, some great things about, you know, what is and isn't equity. And slightly niche, but it was quite interesting. I went to see Rammstein play at Coventry, and the day before their gig, they tweeted out and said, you know, anybody coming to the Coventry gig, you know, send through evidence that you've got your ticket for the event and the evidence that you're registered blind, visually impaired. I thought, oh, that's great, because, you know, then they were offering a tour. What then I saw in the pictures and the tweets afterwards was that before every single show they do this, and the band actually take people round the stage, give them a hands-on tour, so they get that experience. The, as a band, that when they perform, it's a very visual show. They use a lot of props and kind of different things. So to actually take people through that experience, and you know, you could see on Twitter there's kind of these arguments, and it's like, you know, you're saying it's not fair, but actually what they're doing is they're providing an equitable experience. And I just think, you know, that's so wonderful that, you know, they're doing that, you know, that's something that they're choosing to do. And then you think about, you know, everybody started talking about the subtitling on Stranger Things. It's amazing. If you haven't watched Stranger Things, particularly season four, without the subtitles on, you are missing an absolute treat with the just how descriptive it is. And then also, you know, the James Webb Telescope pictures. I don't know if you've seen any of the reports around the alt text. Absolutely beautiful text describing those amazing images that are coming out of that telescope. You know, we're doing out there in the world, we're doing some marvelous things for, you know, accessibility, to make things, you know, accessible. And then we're missing the trick in L&D. It does seem a real shame with where we're at with that.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because those adaptations, those innovations, those really grasping what is the art of the possible isn't L&D driven. And sometimes you'd think from L&D professionals that unless we're running a training course on it, our organisation couldn't possibly be coping with this issue without us. And, you know, maybe there is that, what are we learning from the rest of the world? Like you said, those things that inspire us to think we can be doing so much better. We should be expecting the bare minimum to be a lot higher than we currently expect it to be. One of the things that constantly drives me mad when we're helping organizations to select learning systems are, you know, people will put into their RFPs accessibility, but I very rarely meet anyone who understands what they're asking for. It's normally just a tick box on an RFP and someone will come back and tick that box or say, you know, WCAG standards, and they'll come back and they'll say working towards it, and everyone will go, okay, they're working towards it, all four respondents are working towards it, this is okay then, is it? And it's not. It's actually just going, we don't understand what we're asking, we don't understand what the expectations should be, and we're not actively working as an industry to raise that bar and to say this is not acceptable, that having web standards that are accessible and easy to navigate without a mouse or any of the other things, or work with screen readers, all of those things should be part of what we expect as an absolute bare minimum. Not we expect that they're working towards it because it's a little bit difficult or a little bit more costly or it's not there on their roadmap yet. But that seems to be acceptable in our industry at the moment.
It really does. Although, you know, I'm seeing some exciting innovations and kind of conversations that are happening. And I went to an event at Microsoft and saw Hector Minto talk, which, if you've ever seen Hector Minto talk, he's amazing. And it was one of those moments that, you know, he really role modeled what he talks about. You know, he's not a learning and development person. He is an accessibility evangelist. But what he does is he demonstrates those things that we should be doing. He, you know, talks about disability in a way that makes you realise actually this impacts a lot of people. The stat that really kind of hit home to me that he used is that one in two people loves someone with a disability. And, you know, there are lots and lots and lots of stats around the different disabilities. But then what you hear him talk about is kind of the things that Microsoft are doing and the innovations that, you know, they're working on. You know, Windows 11, I'm really excited to get Windows 11 because it's going to give me offline real-time subtitling. So I'll be able to take a laptop into a meeting and it'll be able to subtitle it for me. Really looking forward to that. You know, so business is doing that. They're doing that, you know, because they've got a real drive to do it, and Microsoft kind of had a look in on themselves and went, actually, you know, we need to do better and we need to champion this. But, you know, the other thing that they pointed out is, you know, the purple pound, the amount of money that people with disabilities spend. You know, yes, okay, you know, that spending might go down, the same as everybody's spending might go down, you know, at the minute, but we're talking about, you know, one in five people has a disability, and that's not taking into account, you know, temporary or situational things such as, you know, broken ankle as a good example for something we were talking about earlier, before we started recording. You know, it's those things, and it's just, you know, making those changes can make a really big difference. And I think, you know, the companies that are working on the technology, if they actually took a moment to kind of think about that good UX and actually having a more accessible platform, you know, people are going to start to vote with their pounds, and that's where they'll go. But it's also thinking about, it's not just about the big box solutions that we might use of, you know, this is my LMS. You know, some of the stuff that I've been hearing from people that have been saying to me is, you know, oh, but I don't know how to make my PDFs accessible. Well, I don't know how to make, you know, I don't know how to do the subtitles, or I don't know how to do this. And I think that's some of the education piece that perhaps we're missing, of that, you know, those small changes making a big difference. You know, if you're using Microsoft Office, you've got those built-in accessibility checkers. Google are now also have, in, if you're using Google Docs, they have that. You know, so it's about finding out what you're using and what the accessibility checkers are. And yes, it is thinking about accessibility, but it's not thinking about accessibility as, oh yeah, I need to remember this. It's actually about thinking about it up front. You know, some of the small changes I've been talking with my colleagues about is, you know, for a simple thing like making sure your email defaults to, you know, a 12-point sans serif font, you know, when you're creating a document in Microsoft Office, is using those accessibility checkers. You know, making sure that people know about how to add captioning, you know, so whether if they're in a Teams meeting, for example, that the individual can opt in and have that captioning and the transcript appear. But if you're not using Teams, then how, if you're presenting, how you could also include subtitles in that presentation. And I just think, you know, when people start, because, you know, now I've started talking about accessibility, people are coming to me like I'm some kind of guru, and I'm not. I'm on a journey. I'm learning as much as everybody else is. But I think there's some really good basics, you know, the accessibility fundamentals training from Microsoft. And it, you know, really breaks down, and it kind of addresses a lot of those WCAG requirements, but it addresses it in a way that I think is a little bit more accessible for the average person, the average user of, you know, and Microsoft Office to do. I promise I'm not being commissioned by them. It's just that's where, you know, my familiarity is, you know, with doing those things. But I think just some of those things need to be that kind of minimum standard. And, you know, we're not always going to get it right, because there's not a silver bullet that, you know, boom, this is more accessible. Because, you know, my lived experience with disability is different to another person's lived experience with disability. It is just some of those little things they're thinking about, and you know, just making it, I'm trying to think of the word, equitable, I think is really kind of what I'm looking for, is, you know, so everybody can use it, because there's so much accessibility stuff has been created to solve an accessibility issue that people are using in everyday life. You know, the ability to blur a background, you know, that came about, that was developed to enable lip reading, so you could focus on someone's face. You know, 2 years ago, we all started using that so no one could see how untidy our houses were. You know, and it is those, you know, having, you know, for example, YouTube will automatically put subtitles on. You know, if you're on a train or something like that, or you're somewhere where it's, you know, you don't want it to be a noisy environment, you've forgotten your headphones or something, but you still want to, you know, watch this bit of content, you know, having that there, or the transcript to read, makes that more accessible. It means that you're not prevented from doing that work. So even if you are hearing, you know, you can still use it. Yeah, I could wax lyrical for ages.
Okay. And Kat, I think you talked about some really interesting points there. And let's start with motivation. So why should people care? And, you shared the one in two people will love someone with a disability. And, you've then touched upon commercial reasons and all sorts of other reasons that people should care. And I would imagine most people sat in L&D or, beyond L&D are listening to this thinking, no matter what your motivation is I want to drive more money into the bottom line. I want to make us more commercial. I'm in a talent role and I want us to be able to access and, empower more talent and tap into a bigger talent pool. There are so many arguments for why this should be something that we understand better, and I think that's the second part. So there's why should I do it, because I love someone, it's commercial, I want to tap into talent, it's the right thing to do, or whatever the reason is, ultimately it's the right thing to do. But when we're then looking at it, I think it's the awareness piece. So you're talking there and you shared probably 20-30 tidbits in a few minutes around things that people can actually tap into, or things probably people are not aware of at the moment, because we know with technology, you get a new phone and there's all sorts of new features on there you are not aware of, and then there's a load of other features you probably don't access, etc. It's the same with accessibility and other things. The world is moving so quickly that something that would have been cumbersome a while ago is now far more solvable, because there are lots of innovations, whether that you're Microsoft, Google, whatever it happens to be, and in other tools as well. And, there's apps and all sorts of things around there. So it's around awareness, it's around conversation, it's around being curious and being interested. And to me, it's always what drives me when I'm trying to look at user experience or customer journeys or anything like that, is if that isn't working as well as it should be, why not, and how can we make that better? And there's normally an answer out there, you just haven't thought of it yet, or there's probably a tool that's going to make that really easy. And it's having that curiosity and collectively solving things. So this is not I come in and you've got to second guess. It's not a guessing game of what accessibility you need to, what my requirements are, or as you said, everyone has a different lived experience. So it's about a conversation, it's about iterative change, it's so many different things mapped into this. And I would love this to be a more prevalent conversation amongst people in learning, but I hear so much about theoretical learning theories and this and that, and I'm just like, actually, let's get with some pragmatic stuff that we can really raise the bar, walk that example, and make sure that next year's learning tech, it's not acceptable for it to be this noisy jamboree that you can't hear anything on with no sort of adaptations. It just, that shouldn't be acceptable, because we're mindlessly just doing what we've always done.
Yeah, I totally agree. My drive in all of this is, it's not just about making the world a better place for me, it's about making the world a better place for everybody else. And I said about some of the stats that I've got, I've got a few more, which I think really surprised people. And when I was talking to colleagues around disability, I talked about that one in two people love someone with a disability, and kind of broke that down. Only 17% of disabled people were actually born with their disabilities. I talked about, I started going deaf at the age of two. I wasn't diagnosed with dyslexia until I was 32. I'd already been to university twice at that point. It got overlooked because I was a high achiever. And that's the thing, we get stuck with these stereotypes of what disability is. And actually people, like I said at the beginning, I don't consider myself, and never consider myself disabled. And I've kind of had to go on a bit of a journey, but since doing that, I've been able to talk to my line manager, we've been able to look at workplace adjustments, we've been able to look at some very simple things that are actually just going to make my life a little bit easier. But then also from a business perspective, actually it's made other people kind of think about, when I set an agenda for a meeting, by clearly kind of setting out what's going to happen in that agenda, I'm suddenly making it more accessible for anybody who has got, anxiety. And one of the things that I was really surprised about when I kind of started to delve more into this journey is, mental health kind of gets considered in with disabilities, not because it's a it's a disability, but because it can disable people. You know, if your mental health is impacting your daily life, your routine, then it becomes a barrier to you. And you know, and that starts to throw up even more stats. You know, you think about, you know, one in four people typically will have, you know, be affected by mental ill health in the course of their life. But actually one in six people will have experienced a mental health problem in the last week. You know, and that's when you start to think, actually, yeah, by doing these things, we're helping, you know, people out. It's thought that between 30 and 40% of the population are neurodiverse. And one of the, it was one of these facts that kind of made me go, wow, that's surprising. And then I kind of went, it's not really, because I hadn't disclosed it either. 75% of people with dyslexia don't tell their employer that they've got dyslexia. And the reason people do this is because they're a little bit unsure about the stigma and the assumptions that people make. You know, my eldest was recently at university being diagnosed with ADHD. And their first thought was, oh, should I be disclosing this to future employers? You know, is it going to impact their view on my ability and my capability? Yeah, and I think it's worrying that we think like this, but it's also understandable that we think like this. And I, you know, the more we start to change people's minds about, you know, why should I care? Actually, because a lot of people are impacted by this. You know, that's why we should care, because people are masking or hiding or finding coping mechanisms. And, you know, actually, we could just make it a little bit easier. You know, that lack of friction. I was listening to a talk about simply about UX design, and they were talking about, you know, reducing friction for people. You know, and it's as simple as that. It's reducing friction for people to be able to, you know, live lives, do jobs, you know.
And I think that's a really good example, because I think going back to earlier today, I was trying to do a couple of things on websites and I hit points where it was just an illogical process, or, you know, I hadn't filled out a field which wasn't asterisked as, you know, you have to fill this and this is a field that has to be filled in before you can move past the page. And the frustration in me, because I'm essentially lazy and I like things to be smooth and I don't want to waste my time on things that are not important. Effectively, I want to get through those things and get onto the things where I want to spend my time. And everyone should have that ability in life to do that. And when, you know, you're having to come across and someone hasn't even thought about that for anyone, let alone when you know, your normal starting point is, I may not have been considered. I am going to have to work around things. This is going to be a difficult journey. If you start to think about that in, you know, all sorts of ways, we are turning people off as customers, employees, colleagues, all sorts of things by not thinking about what we can do to adapt and make that UX as easy as we can and as streamlined and frictionless for everyone. That's got to be, you know, to me, that's one of the human rights we should have, of being able to have a frictionless life as much as possible. We shouldn't be the straightforward things should be straightforward. You know, the difficult things will be difficult. And, you know, too often they're in the wrong place.
Definitely. And you've absolutely reminded me of one of the points that I made when I was talking to colleagues. We touched on representation, you know, and that being considered, you know. And it's one of these things that until we represent everybody, the question that people always have is, do I belong? You know, and we've seen a lot of movement in things such as Black Lives Matter, and we're seeing some great things, still more work to do in those spaces, but seeing some great things happening. But I also, again, I picked out some key facts and figures for people to really kind of bring this home. And I picked on Lego, because Lego kind of, you know, their company ethos is, you know, it's around, you know, not really having those gender splits and being equal and things like that. And it was 2003 when Lego actually launched authentic skin colours. And the very first character to actually have authentic skin colour was Lando Calrissian, which I could then tell, you know, from the listeners, you know, who were the geeks and who weren't, because of the people who knew who Lando Calrissian was. So that was 2003, but it wasn't until 2016 that the first wheelchair and assistance dog came into Lego. It wasn't until 2020 that the first minifig had a little hearing aid on that. And, you know, it was this month that the first realistic prosthesis has actually been released. Yeah, so there's still a way to go out there, but at least, you know, I'm thinking of, you know, children playing with Lego and, you know, finally kind of seeing themselves represented. And I think that's what we need to do, that we need to consider people, because otherwise, you know, it's the do I belong? Am I part of this? And, you know, fundamentally, I can say I left Learning Technologies this year feeling like I didn't belong and I wasn't part of it. And that's why we need to change.
And I absolutely agree with that. And on a recent podcast we did, we were talking about special education needs in formal education and how underfunded, how much of a postcode lottery it is. And then you come through to the workplace and it's equally a, not necessarily a postcode lottery, but it's a organisational, you know, awareness lottery, who your colleagues are, how much that's being considered. And I think we all, regardless of representation or anything else, have to pick up this and take this more seriously. And certainly as a learning function, industry, profession, whatever we want to call ourselves, we need to role model this. We need to be curious and we need to be working out how we show business and also collaborate and learn from the rest of business, because we've also said we are not the guardians of good ideas or innovation in this space, but we should be the facilitators of sharing of that knowledge across our organisations. That's our role, not to know it all, but to be able to connect, share, collaborate, innovate, and just challenge back as to what can be done better, both within our own functions, but also within our services, internal and external within businesses.
Absolutely agree.
So Kat, if anyone has been inspired by our conversation or potentially shamed by how little they know, and I will say that because I think there will be, you know, again, I've enjoyed our conversation because every time I speak to you, there's something else I find out and I like to learn new stuff. So if anyone has in that position of going, actually, this is something I really want to find out about, or I better clue up on the exam on this because actually I'm way behind and I need to know a lot more, where are some good places for them to start or things they could be doing?
I think, you know, I've already mentioned Microsoft Fundamentals. You know, have a search for it, and it's a brilliant course to take you through, if you're using Microsoft products, of how you can make that more accessible. Even if you're not using Microsoft products, I think it's that understanding of what is a good baseline, because then you can take that information and work out how that would apply to some of the products that you are using. The other thing that I would say is start to look at people out there, particularly on LinkedIn. There's some really great advocates for disability. I follow, the names completely elude me at this point in time. But just, you know, using the hashtag A11Y, you know, on LinkedIn or Twitter. So that is the hashtag for accessibility. So accessibility is 11 letters long, hence the 11 in the middle, but it's also ally. So it's a great hashtag to follow and, you know, and find people out there. I mentioned Hector Minto as an accessibility evangelist. He shares a lot of great information. You know, talk to your networks. Where I work, we've got a disability network of colleagues that you can talk to. You've got people there who are invested in your business. You know, find out about their lived experience. You know, maybe include them in some of your testing and design processes, you know, and just talk to people, you know, because like myself, we will talk about our experiences if people ask, but you know, often we're not asked, and it's, you know, it takes people like me to kind of go, hello, I'm going to talk about this, you know, and I'm not going to go away. And be prepared to go on a journey. That's what I'm doing. I definitely don't have all the answers, but I am willing to share what I learn on my journey.
Yeah, and you've mentioned, you know, several times you're on the journey yourself. And I think that's really important that we're all on a journey, just where we are and how, you know, motivated we are to go on that journey. Where next for you? What, you know, what's inspired you? Is there anything particular you want to find out more about or explore?
So it's a slight tangent for me. I got really quite inspired around those UX design principles. So I'm busy just, you know, doing a little bit more about UX design and understanding that a bit more. But from a purely accessibility point of view, it's going to different events, talking to different people. It's learning about some of the different tools that are out there, and just learning from other people and kind of starting to network with different people. I had a few people reach out to me on LinkedIn, so starting to network with those people and just really kind of understand others' lived experiences, because, you know, I can only go by my own experiences, the same as anybody else can. And I think the more we educate ourselves on, you know, I know nothing really about visual impairment other than, you know, being a bit short-sighted and wearing glasses. But I don't really understand, you know, greater demands of visual impairment. Although I worked with a colleague who was completely visually impaired, who used to do amazing things with an iPad, just with a completely black screen, and just, you know, learning all the different gestures and things like that, and, you know, understanding, you know, how people navigate the world, I think is really important. As for the rest of my journey, I'm on LinkedIn and I'll probably share it on LinkedIn, which sounds like a blatant plug, but I can't actually tell you exactly where I'm going, because I'm just, you know, I'm learning and just trying to find out from other people.
So Kat, I'm guessing lots of people will want to connect and follow that journey. So we will put your connection details, whether that's LinkedIn or whatever else, in the show notes below. And, you know, any of the other things we've talked about today, we'll put a little summary of some of the things, because I think there's been so much mentioned today. So thank you very much for joining us today. I've loved the conversation. I've learned loads myself through the course of the half hour or so we've been chatting. So thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Learning Reinvented podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you've not already done so, please follow our podcast. And if the learning effect can help you and your organisation, please do get in touch. You can find both James and Katie on LinkedIn, and our contact details are in the show notes below.